many people know everybody. But on the other hand, I think I'll go ahead and open a meeting of the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee on Thursday. Oh, and she's ahead of me. Thursday, March 16th, 2017. And we have another exciting agenda ahead of us. We have three public hearings on today's agenda, and they all relate to the HEX role in investigation of complaints. So let's jump right in. And I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2701. Laura, would you please do the honors on that? Give us a little summary.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2701 would prohibit Higher Education Coordinating Commission from placing career school or agents on probation or suspending or revoking license unless a contested case hearing is instituted and the sanction is authorized by a hearing officer. Requires the HEC to provide licensee a copy of the complaint that initiated the investigation, copy of findings that resulted from the investigation, and written notice of place, time, and reason for hearing. There is a -1 amendment which declares emergency effective on passage.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. Would the three representatives like to come up first? And welcome.
Rose, we'll put the rose between the thorns.
Yes.
You're all highly esteemed and but equal in my eyes, so you, whoever would like to go first.
She's an Irish rose. The Irish rose.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Bill Kennemer, State Representative, District 39, thank you for this opportunity to do the hearing. It was some time back that Nancy Hungerford, a local attorney, contacted me, and she said that she thought that there was quite an injustice going on down in Medford, and would I introduce a bill? So that's the basis for 2701. Here to speak about this a little bit more are people who know more about these issues than I. So we have Representative Doherty, and Sal, Representative Escobar actually represents the district in which this school that was the cause for this is. And then Nancy Hungerford will come and present some detailed testimony.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
And incidentally, she's done this pro bono, so I just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. For the record, I'm Margaret Doherty. I'm the House Rep for House District 35, which is Tigard, Southwest Portland. And as I say, Representative Kennemer called because Ms. Hungerford and I go way, way back in our professional careers. And when she went through and talked about the issue that there seemed to be a different protocol for, and she'll be going into much more of the detail, there's a difference in protocol between a probationary, a two-year school on probation versus a four-year school, you know, kind of the first thing that came into my mind was, why is it not the same, and is there a due process? And so what I think what you're going to be hearing today is it's really kind of a due process issue, the issue of if you have a two-year training school, two-year institution that provides services and there's been a complaint filed, shouldn't they have the same sort of pre-hearing investigation sort of situation as a four-year school before probation is put on or before people know that there's a problem. And so that's the issue that we're bringing forward to you today. And so I know that Ms. Hungerford will bring a lot more information and details to the case, but I'm very supportive of this House bill.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sal Escobar, Representative District 6, Medford. I've been, in fact, this school, I went to broker school in this 25 years ago in this same school. It's been a very, very accredited and a very responsible schooling within our community, Southern Oregon. I want to read some things, though, from Kai. She's the owner, and these are things that she has alleged happened, and I have discussed this with the HECC, some of the people from there, and we do have some holes in the system that we need to take care of, and I think they will be coming forward and asking for some permission to get some legislation done where they feel that they need some help, and that's fine as long as we're doing that. First of all, we do not have a process for these people, in my opinion. She was informed, Kai, the owner, was informed that they were performing an investigation on her school due to a complaint, which is fine. She made numerous requests to know what the complaint was regarding, and both individuals from the state refused to tell her what it was. I mean, that's hard to believe, but that's what she states. She also states that she was refused to allow her the opportunity to defend herself against the unknown complaint and refused to allow her to provide documentation and or testify of others that could demonstrate her school's competency against the unknown complaint. Public records requests revealed that an individual in the state conducted a bias investigation and provided confidential school and school employee information to students and ex-employees of the school without her knowledge or her consent. Another point was that the information provided to the news media not only hurt her registration, but also hurt her in the long run, because now instead of being convicted or being found guilty of something, it went out first, and then after the fact then they decided what the outcome was. So it's a classic example of you're guilty and you have to prove yourself innocent, which is wrong. That's just opposite of what we normally do. Oregon's degree-granting private schools are provided with the right of opportunity of a hearing and or an appeal prior to action by the HECC, but Oregon's private non-degree-granting schools currently are not offered the same right and are at the mercy of the people involved in the state. So I think that kind of tells you a couple things that's going on here, and it'll be good that you have some background information to ask some questions when the staff comes up.
And is your testimony available?
Well, I can turn this in.
That'd be great.
So that isn't all of it. There's other stuff here, but I didn't think it was relevant.
And Rep. One other thing I needed to add, if I may, the owner would be here today, but her son is in surgery.
Correct.
So that's why she's not here making her own case.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you so
much. And thank all of you for, I'm sorry, were there any questions to this?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Oh,
thank
I let
you
us
very
off
much.
Easy, Mr. Chair.
This time.
See you later.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shouldn't cover that up. No. Oh, okay. I'd like to, all three. I call up Nancy Hungerford and Jeffrey Ng.
They didn't exist anymore, but they wouldn't know that.
Thank you, Chair Reardon, and members of the panel and the committee. I want to speak to you a little bit more about the actual law that is at issue here. And
I'm sorry, did you say your name, Nancy?
Nancy Hungerford.
You did. Okay. Thank you very much.
I'm an attorney with Hungerford Law Firm, and normally I represent K-12 school districts, and I also represent community colleges. Quite by accident, Kai was referred to me, and I became her attorney pro bono. She is the owner of a very small business in Medford. It's a private career college, and what they do is prepare individuals for employment in fields like medical assisting, dental assisting, veterinary assisting. So these are careers that give people who have little training before they go to her school to come out and get a job that's going to be a substantial family wage type job. And this is a step up for a whole lot of people, which you can achieve in a 6 to 9 month training period. It's a very important part of our educational system. The problem that I ran into in representing Kai was that we did not have the opportunity for her to defend herself before she was placed on probation. And here's the reason why on the first page of my handout. There, I've cited for you the law regarding private degree-granting colleges, which says that before they can be placed on probation, they have the right to, there has to be a finding of proper cause after a hearing. So I've underlined those words in that statute. So they get a hearing, and nobody's going to place them on probation until they've had that hearing and there's been a finding by a hearings officer about proper cause. But the private non-degree granting colleges, which is the bottom section of this, while if they have a suspension or a revocation, they do have the opportunity for a hearing before a hearings officer from the Oregon Administrative Hearings Office. But they can be placed on probation with nothing more than simply one person's determination in the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. And in this case, we believe substantial justice was done, but I'm here mostly to speak about the fact that the system as it exists does not allow for due process. Why does this make a difference? If you look at the second page, I want to point out some of the ramifications of this gap in due process that affects these schools. And by the way, there are almost 200 of these private non-degree granting career colleges in the state. I would imagine there are some in almost every district, so you represent some of these folks. They probably don't come to your attention very often because they do their business quietly. And unlike some of the large out-of-state conglomerates that you've heard about, most of these are small business people. And essentially what happens when they're placed on probation, as Kai experienced, is that they run the risk of being put out of business without ever having the opportunity to defend themselves. So I've noted here that most private career colleges are owned and operated by small business people. What due process provides is the opportunity to defend yourself before a notice is given. And in this particular case, when HEC, Higher Education Coordinating Commission, placed the school on probation, they told the complainant that the school had been placed on probation. The complainant went to the news media, went on social media, just completely blasted the reputation of this school, and it has been to a substantial detriment of Kai and her ability to continue to operate because enrollment numbers go down. Some of the activity around social media is very influential with young people who are looking to decide how they're going to continue their education and so forth. And so the fact that this information does get out, it's not a private, secure matter or anything like that. So without adequate opportunity for an appeal, HEC can conduct an inadequate or biased investigation, and the college had no opportunity to present contrary information or to cross-examine the accusers. We believe that that did happen in this case, that it was an inadequate investigation, it was a biased investigation. But regardless, the opportunity to cross-examine and to confront your accusers, she did not have. And by the way, the complaint in this case was by one student who violated the dress code, which they have instituted into their program because of the fact that these are students preparing to work in medical offices, and they will be expected to come to work nicely groomed, professionally groomed, and wearing the appropriate garb. The student who was the complainant wore her hair in an upswept bun, and she was insisting upon sticking pencils and magic markers in her hair. And she was told not to do that, and she was told a second time, and then a third time she was told, well, I guess, you know, we're going to have to give you some consequences. You're going to kind of be on probation here for a while. She was taken off after 1 month. That was long before any investigation was done by HEC. So one simple complaint like that, which I believe in the past has been handled, and I've talked with Rob Saxton, who, as the head of the Office of Department of Education, used to be, these private career colleges used to be under ODE. They got moved into HEC. But, you know, what he indicated was that in the past that the usual thing was to call up the school, and if you had a complaint, work it out. And they never put someone on probation. They did so in Kai's case. And there are a lot of reasons for that that I don't need to go into, but we do believe it was an inadequate and biased investigation. But the point is there was no opportunity to challenge the findings of fact. As a matter of fact, after the decision came out, not only was Kai given probation, but there was supposedly going to be a $500 civil penalty. We filed an appeal. HEC then backed off of the $500 penalty and said, you can't go to hearing. And we were scheduled to go to hearing on the $500 penalty, the civil penalty. They withdrew that, so we could not have a right to a hearing. and they continued to maintain that there was no right to challenge in any way this decision about probation. Of course, we believe that due process is a fundamental right of every American prior to governmental action that deprives them of a property right. And she's operating a business, has done so over a decade, has educated many, many people in Medford area, and they're working in medical offices and dental offices, veterinarian's offices. She didn't have that due process opportunity. A couple of other things I want to point out. Higher Education Coordinating Commission has issued some sort of a statement saying that, well, it's no big deal to be placed on probation. Not so.
Not so.
First, probation can lead to the loss of accreditation. And in this case, HEC reported the probationary action to the accreditation, the National Accreditation, BARM. They would have taken her accreditation away had we not sent a lot of information, and I sent a letter to them cautioning them not to just take on face value HEC's determination, and they then backed off on any move to. But had they removed her accreditation, she would have been without opportunity to use the federal loan program for her students. And you know that that's a very important part of running a school, is the ability of your students to have loans. So she probably would have been out of business entirely at that point. And then finally, because the complainant is notified and there's no constraints on the complainant, this all will generally hit the news media, the social media, and her business has been very substantially affected. That's why when I talked to Representative Kenemer, I thought that this bill really belongs in the Small Business Committee. But you're hearing it, and we believe that you need to look out for the interests, not just for these owners of these career colleges, but for the interests of all those students who will benefit from attending. And while I think that you also might hear from HEC that they can pass rules to provide for appropriate due process, rules can be changed. You folks can enact laws that will protect these schools. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and representatives, my name is Jeff Eng, and I've been in front of this committee in the past before. I'm a career school advocate. In the past, I've been the state director of the Northwest Career College Federation and currently still represent a number of career schools within our state. I'd like to voice my support on the due process aspect of this bill. I do think it is important that in this day and age, as Nancy was talking about, of social media and instantaneous information that can and sometimes can be changed depending upon the source of that information, have a drastic effect on a small business such as a career school. The idea, I believe, behind this is to make sure that the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, as well as all parties involved, have all the information necessary to make a decision that can, in effect, have drastic effects on the viability of a business here in the state of Oregon. With that, I think, need to make sure that the protection of students is first and foremost in everybody's mind. We've had recent instances where schools have closed suddenly, unexpectedly, and have left a number of students in a lurch where they've paid funds into a school and are no longer able to continue their education. There are times where I believe that regulation sometimes plays a role in the early demise of a school that may be a viable alternative for students in their education. A school that is placed on probation is a very serious financial situation for that school and theoretically could cause the school financial ruin. It sounds like Kai School here came very, very close from what Nancy is saying to not being a viable participant in the education arena anymore.
Let me interrupt you just for a moment. Rep. Alonzo Leon.
Thank you, Chair. Jeff, can you clarify when you said school closures, are you referring to the head closing schools, or are you talking in general about some of those, like IT Tech, that suddenly closed?
Correct.
In general.
Yeah. On the private school side, several years ago, Anthem College suddenly closed due to bankruptcy. But I understand. I understand the HECs need to protect students. But I also feel that there are times where a overregulation of probation that may or may not fall on a gray line, so to speak, really is serious enough to require the option of the school to have a hearing and have all the information placed before the HEC. I think the school's voice is an important aspect of being able to provide that information in a hearing. I think that it will protect students from a situation where a school may be drastically affected by a probationary order and may not be viable for continuation due to the sudden loss of student enrollment. From what Nancy has been saying, that school was hit very hard by this probationary order. It went out on social media, it went out into the media, and of course it resulted in a decreased number of enrollments. So I think it's a serious enough situation where I think a hearing should be an option for the career school. I caution the bill, though, in making sure that that is an option and not mandatory. There may be schools that would not want to take on the additional expense of a hearing, administrative law hearing, and they should have that option. So I would hope that we would have the option of the schools to request the hearing versus it be mandatory across the board for every situation.
Okay. Rep. Bynum, did you have a question?
At the conclusion.
Okay. Thank you.
That was
okay,
just
great.
Sort of what I had to
good
say.
Timing. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have quite a few questions because I am a business owner and I'm very sensitive to things like this. So a couple questions. The first is, Ms. Hungerford, you stated that there was a loss of property rights or there was some challenge to property rights. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to know what you considered was the property. Was it the license, the accreditation, or the school's reputation?
I think it actually was all of those.
Okay.
HEC did not threaten at that moment that they were going to revoke the state license.
Okay.
But because they are required to report probation, there was a definite risk of loss of accreditation, which would have closed the school right there because of the interplay with that and the loans. The reputation is a very important part of these schools. They need to attract a new group of students virtually every month. It's a 6 to 9 month program, so they got a group of people circulating through. So just, the effect of having the news media report that they've been placed on probation on the front page of the Medford paper is going to have significant ramifications, even without any of the social media effects. And, you know, all we're asking for here is the right for that school to be able to challenge. And I agree with Jeff, it should be the option of the school and not a mandatory. But to challenge that the process has been biased or that the process has been inaccurate. If you note that there are four reasons on the front page as to why the commission can place a licensee on probation, these non-degree granting, one of them is that the school violated the statute or the applicable rule. Well, in this case, the actual decision that was rendered by HEC did not allege any violation of any statute or any rule. They did not find any violation, but nevertheless, they placed the school on probation. So the opportunity to clear your name and to do that before it becomes public knowledge is very important.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The second question I have is it's a two-part. Number one, was there an incentive for the state to do what it did in terms of acting out of statute and adversely or proactively on behalf of the complainant? Depends on how you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they did do the hearing, is the administrator or the administrative law judge trained in understanding what the actual circumstances are? And if you ask for a hearing, are the people trained enough in the details of how the for-profit, or I don't know if you call them for-profit, in these two-year schools, do they understand exactly what they're working with? So motivation and training.
I can answer the second part first. We've specified that they would have a contested case hearing under ORS 183.310, which is those hearings are held by officers who are attorneys, and they are employed by the State Office of Administrative Hearings. They will have a lot of expertise in just applying the law, applying regulations.
Okay.
They do hear a number of different kinds of cases, but they have that expertise. In terms of your first question about whether there was an incentive to place the school on probation, is that your question?
Yeah.
You know, I think that without going into the details, I believe that there was an improper incentive in this case, in that Kai had been critical of the agency and had very recently written critical remarks about some of the new rules the agency was going to put in place. And I believe that that's what brought her under the scrutiny of HEC. Now, that's my opinion, but that's the best I can explain to you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming. Do you know of any career school in Oregon that currently faces a threat of probation or is under probation right now?
Yeah,
you can. Jeff.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not aware. I don't know that I would have that information.
And I have a follow-up. Thank you. Do you know how many schools in the past 10 or let's make it 20 years that have fallen under this program? I'm trying to get a frequency of how often this happens. We have the one case here, but I'm just trying to figure out, is this an epidemic, or is it just something that we just a loophole we need to fix?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I really don't have that information.
Okay.
My opinion and gut instinct would say that this is a relatively rare instance, and that's a question probably better answered by the HEC.
The HEC, okay. Thank
we'll
you.
Have more information on that. Mm-hmm.
Sure, Nick.
Okay. I can answer one portion of this, as I did talk to, Rob Saxton, who was the Oregon Superintendent of Schools, and he was very familiar with the way this law was enforced when it was under his jurisdiction. And he told me that basically when there was a complaint that came in, he simply asked his staff to work to resolve it, and that they never felt that there was a need to place anyone on probation. And I would tell you that Kai was working to comply with or to do whatever they were going to ask her. It was not necessary, and she took many steps before they placed her on probation. They waited 4 months after the investigation to place her on probation. She had already done all of the corrective things that they were going to ask her to do. It may be an isolated case. It also may be the fact that there's not been much activity since, because I think that some of the other schools know that they can also exercise some rights to protest and push back. That may be accountable for it. It's only been in recent years that HEC has controlled these schools.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we do need to get moving along, but I have one quick question from Rep. Johnson, and then maybe I have one
more.
Very
nice segue. I appreciate that. Let me just start by saying, since I've been on this committee, we've encountered, we've dealt with the issue of private career colleges off and on, and I'll just say it, that there's been kind of an inherent bias against what I'll call for-profit career schools, and I'll let you just, interpret that as you will, but, and not to say that there haven't been bad actors, because there have been. but it's been awful easy to try to paint with a broad brush and label them all, you know, and look at them kind of from the standpoint that they need to prove that they're doing, not an error. Rather, you know, it's like you're guilty before you have to prove your innocence while you're guilty. But Nancy, this reminds me a little bit about the TSPC complaint process, which you'll understand there too, that operates where it's pretty easy to file a complaint against an educator.
Yeah.
And that's an open, you know, again, it's an open docket that has to be investigated by TSPC, but until that's resolved, there is that pending, you know, scarlet letter against that educator until that's resolved as well, and we're trying to work through that, but it's almost like with HEC now and in the career colleges, we have non-degree granting career colleges, we kind of have a similar dynamic in play. But let me just... Part of this stems from where I think we've been a little overly broad in some of the statutes and some of the legislation we passed, where, you know, we have given things like private right of action, you know, that can be directed against any institution where any individual can file a complaint for any reason, and there isn't really a screening process for those complaints they have to go through before they go directly to the governing body, and that's part of the problem with TSPC. You know, anybody can file a complaint against a teacher because you're not playing my kid enough at soccer team or whatever, and it goes right to the top agent, and they have to deal with that before they get that eradicated. But it, you know, and again, if you look under the degree-granting colleges, it's clear there's a process in there, but it's just for whatever reason hasn't percolated over to this non-degree-granting institution. So clearly it seems like a real oversight. That could
and,
pretty easily
you know, I would say that it's not going to be any more burdensome to have this right for the non-degree granting colleges than it has been for the degree granting colleges. And there's just no rationale for a distinction to be had between these two.
Good insight. Is there litigation planned or in process or underway that would regarding this situation?
We have issued a tort claim notice. Yeah, in this case. So there's not been any litigation initiated as of yet, but we have done the tort claim notice.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay. Thank you both for your testimony.
Appreciate it.
And I'd like to call up Kyle Thomas from HEC. Just for my planning purposes, was there anybody else out there just eager to testify on this? Okay, good. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Reardon, members of the committee. My name is Kyle Thomas. I'm the Legislative and Policy Affairs Director for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, and I'll just make a few brief points on that cover what I've submitted already to you in written testimony. First, and I'll agree generally with the point the speakers before me made, there is, in fact, a difference between the probation process as it is applied to private career schools versus as it is applied to schools that are licensed under the Office of Degree Authorization. And I'm not really aware of the history of how the statutes developed. They have developed in a bit of a silo, but I can tell you that there is a difference in what the term probation means between those two sets of statutes. Under the private career school statutes, the statutes that this bill covers, all probation is a notification to an institution that HEC believes they need to take a corrective action, and it provides the institution a set specified period of time with which they have to take that corrective action. If they do take that action, no further civil penalty, no suspension, or no revocation occurs. That is different than the process for the Office of Degree Authorization schools. Under the probation statute for ODA schools, if an institution within, I believe they have a 20-day grace period, does not submit to the HEC information or a plan to correct any deficiencies that have been identified, the probation restricts those schools from advertising or enrolling students under the program that has been subject to probation. So one carries with it certainly there is the potential that the action of probation could carry with it reputational effects that have been described, but there is no state-administered penalty under probation. The way the statutes also read is that if the HEC is taking any additional action, the two I mentioned, suspension or revocation of a license for the school to operate, they do have the right under the current statute to request an administrative hearing. I'll just address a couple of the points that individual legislators have made in regards to the previous witnesses. Representative Reschke asked how many probation actions have been taken. I believe it was in the last 20 years. I don't have that information. I can tell you that since the HEC took on the responsibility, we have engaged in exactly one probationary action.
And how long has that been?
It's been 3 years.
Okay.
And then to address a point that Representative Esquivel had made earlier, he is correct that we do not have authority under public records law or under the HEC statutes to keep any investigatory actions or materials away from public view or an otherwise secret. So I'll stop there and answer any questions that you might have.
Questions?
Just for a general understanding, Kyle, can you give us kind of an overview of the complaint process? So a student calls the office, mm-hmm. and says, I have a complaint about the school.
Mm-hmm.
And then what your office does beyond, what your office does with that complaint, just to give us a better understanding.
So,
because it'll help us explain how we got to where we're at.
Certainly. I'm going to actually ask our director of private post-secondary, Juan Baez Arevalo, to come up and help walk through that process. He has a greater understanding of what it entails.
Thank you.
Welcome. Just go ahead and identify yourself and go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Alonso, Vice Chair Wisnett, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Juan Baez Arevalo. I'm the Director of Private Post-Secondary Education for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. Representative Alonso, in terms of your question, when we received a complaint, our staff members notify the school and ask for information about the nature of the complaint, background, what's going on. Generally, they refer the complaint back to the school to make sure that the institutional processes are being followed, because the institution should have some sort of internal mechanism to resolve these matters before they come to the HEC. If the student has gone through that process, then they're coming to us. If the student is unable, for one reason or another, to go through that process, whether it's whatever the case may be, they explain that rationale. And that's where the staff do engage in asking the school for information and asking the student for information. And most of the time, matters get resolved relatively quickly without our staff going any deeper in terms of an investigation, because the school and the students are able to resolve the matter.
Follow up?
Please, yes.
So in this case, not to go into super detail, because it sounds like there's potential litigation, it sounds like from your process, something didn't happen at the institution, something didn't get resolved in the institution, causing the student to then call the HEC office to further a complaint, because nothing changed for them, or they weren't able to resolve their situation?
Representative Alonso Leon, I obviously cannot get into details of a particular
Correct.
Case, but generally when a complaint or an issue is not being resolved at the institution, or it's not for one reason or another, right, whether the parties cannot come to an agreement or will not come to an agreement, or if the student feels that they can't, or there's the venue that is there on paper is not there for them, then that's when the HEC staff do conduct investigations or review a case at that point in time.
I'd just like to add a little bit that tends to be the process not only for private career schools, but for any school in the state of Oregon. The first step in resolving a student complaint tends to be asking the student if they've worked through any institutional processes that exist for the resolution of that complaint.
Thank you.
Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what's the process then from going from a complaint to a probation? I'm missing something here. Mm-hmm. How do we elevate from a complaint that you're checking into, you make a few phone calls, you ask the complainee if they've, you know, if they're working on it, to suddenly here the heck declares them under probation? I'm not clear on that.
Representative Johnson, not to get into details on any particular case, but
in general, right.
When the heck issues an order like that or makes any other requirement of a school, is because there have been findings or there's evidences of violations, or violations have been confirmed and identified and recorded. That's when you could see the potential notice of any probation or any other corrective action that is requested of the school. That's generally the approach with any school that we have jurisdiction over. So it's after the investigation, after information has been gathered and confirmed that there is a violation. It has to be a very specific violation. And obviously not all cases lead or should lead towards a probationary notice or any other sanction of that nature.
I'm kind of missing something here as well, so just bear with me late in the week. So how do we, once there's a decision within HEC that something is amiss or thought to be, there's been your internal investigation, there's a decision made to that a probation would be the next step, what's the process then for notifying the school that's being looked at and the media?
Chair, there's a process, there's a formal letter that gets sent to the school. So there's some notification that goes to the school. The media is not in our protocol.
Okay.
So we don't notify the media in our protocol for any action that we've taken, any sort of complaint as a norm. It's not something that our office does. One thing that we learned after inheriting these units in the HEC, that the Higher Education Coordinating Commission does not have the authority or the ability to maintain information confidential. So any information that we received in terms of a complaint or any action that we take is a matter of public records. And if we have a media inquiry about any particular case, of course, we're also obligated to release the information. But in our protocols, we do not notify the media on that.
So just for my clarification, make sure I understand, you're not over a, it's not part of your process to call the media and say, hey, we got a,
no.
Putting on somebody on probation, but those records are open to the public, and that's how they find out.
That
and
is
would, so it's potentially then the school and the media could be finding out within microseconds of each other.
If the media is asking at that moment in time, or yeah,
okay,
or
yeah,
relentlessly, sure. as okay. It occurs
okay.
With
okay.
With the media, as okay. Some of you have experienced.
Oh, Rupert, we need one from the left side here.
Left
our,
side.
Let my left, oh, not
our
no political
our left.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So. I guess I'm having a hard time understanding how, we've said several times we're not going to cover the details of the case, which kind of puts us at a little bit of a disadvantage here. Why would the media know about this if it wasn't some, I mean, I'm assuming it wasn't some massive, horrible situation. Maybe it was. I don't know. Why would the media just know about something like this? I mean, who would have contacted them?
And of course, not this case, but in some
in general.
Some generalized case, if you could talk about
well,
that.
Mr. Chair, so, if I may.
Yeah, please.
So, the reason I ask is because I am somewhat familiar with some different private citizen company versus the state of Oregon and different agencies going back and forth issues from different folks within my district. And there's been several times where it just didn't make a lot of sense to me how all of a sudden the media was just all over this stuff. People that were calling the media, it just seems like a lot of times our agencies sometimes might be getting, and I'm not saying that's what happened here, but I become suspicious after a while. There just seems to be a consistent trend of this kind of stuff where people that are calling the media, giving certain complaints, saying, hey, you need to look into this, it just seems like they've got too much information to where it shouldn't be coming from them. I don't know. I'm just kind of curious. It's suspicious to me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heard, a couple of things that worth mentioning here in terms of media involvement. We obviously do not report it. We don't go to media. We don't issue press releases. We don't do any of that. Can a citizen, whether it's a student, a parent, an advocate, a community action group, go to the media in a case? Yes, that can happen. Can they go to the media and say the heck's not doing anything? That can and does happen. That is one of those things where nowadays there's this, hypersensitivity of the media and individuals going to the media either because action's not being taken or whichever is the case, whatever unhappiness people have. And social media, I think, augments that.
Yeah. If I can just add on to that just slightly. Certainly if we get a media inquiry that falls short of a Freedom of Information Act request, as long as there's no other provision in law that protects the confidentiality of that information, we're likely to respond to that media inquiry. There's an interesting question perhaps for the committee to consider in that certainly there is this whole related to investigations in progress, but at the same time, probation, the act of formally notifying a school that there are deficiencies to correct, is a disposition of a case. And so there's a competing question over whether or not that disposition should remain private information.
Okay. Represhke, and then we do need to kind of get moving. We have two other bills to hear. One of them, and they're both kind of related. Matter of fact, we will see these two gentlemen, at least Kyle again.
I'll go real quick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a quick clarification question for Mr. Thomas, and that was, it sounds like to me that probation is the same word used for a four-year institution and also a career school learning, but it has totally different meanings in how it's applied. And yet, probation in a student's mind is a damning word in the sense that this school is closing or it's no longer good or it's going under. And I'm just wondering, I'm just thinking out loud here, is there a better word we could use or to reflect it's a totally different process?
Chair Reeder and Representative Reschke, you're correct. The term is the same in statute. The statutes developed essentially independently of each other and have taken on different meanings. And if there is a desire to clarify through utilization of different terminology what it truly means, what the differentiation is between the HEC action in either case, certainly we can have a conversation about that.
Okay, great. Okay, well, thank you all for your great questions today. Thank you for being here. And I'm going to go ahead and close public hearing on House Bill 2701 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2559. And Laura, if you could give us a brief summary, please.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2559 would prohibit the Higher Education Coordinating Commission from placing school or school programs on probation or suspending or revoking approval unless a hearing has occurred prior to sanctioning and the sanction is authorized by the hearing officer. Authorizes hearing officer rather than the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to establish conditions the school or program must meet to continue to operate in Oregon.
Hey, thank you. And we have scheduled testimony from Representative Neerman. I'm sorry to have kept you waiting so long, but we've had a lot of interest in this topic, and glad to have you here today.
If I can, if I can have Mr. Eng come up also.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Alonzo Leon, and Vice Chair Wisnett, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Nierman. I'm the representative for House District 23. And what this bill is about is just some due process around the disciplinary action for private career schools. And I know you're busy, so I'll just turn it over to the expert.
Mr. Chair and representatives, again, I'm Jeff Eng, as you know from our previous bill. 2 years ago, I testified on behalf of House Bill 3516, which created a probationary status for schools that fall under the Office of Degree Authorization, and basically that is private schools that offer degrees here in the state of Oregon, unlike the private schools which offer certificates and diplomas. Obviously, with that process, we worked very closely with the HEC, and it was a very collaborative effort as we worked forward on 3516, trying to make a bill that secured the future of students and protected students, as well as provided opportunities for the schools themselves. The bill passed with a great deal of support from the career schools. In addition to that bill, in that bill to create the disciplinary process, which added a probationary status that the HEC can impose on schools, it required all schools approved by the Office of Degree Authorization to have a surety bond protecting prepaid tuition paid by students for participation in that school. The statute passed with support. We went through the administrative rule process. The reason for this bill is to correct some minor wording. It's probably a very easy fix. Once we created that probationary status, sanctions are imposed by the HEC on schools. Now, if we take what we've heard previously as the definition of probation, and assuming that the purpose of probation is to have a period of corrective action for a school that is still expected to be able to be successful, the sanctions are pretty damning as far as the future of these schools. The sanctions include ceasing all marketing, so the school will no longer be able to advertise. It will cease all enrollment. It will be prevented from starting any schools who have enrolled in that school and are scheduled to start. Their start is prohibited if the school is on probation. And all the students as well as employees are notified of the probationary status. The schools have an option to, in the ODA side, to do a hearing, an appeal, which is wonderful. Our concern is that pending the outcomes of this hearing, when an official formally administered letter from the HEC to the school places them on probation, these sanctions take immediate effect. We've been working with the HEC, Juan and Kyle, and we have assurances that if a school is on appeal, that they will not place those sanctions on the school immediately. I don't see anything in rule that says that. It to me, it says that they formally, once you go on probation, sanctions begin. If I have their assurance that indeed the sanctions don't begin until the completion of the hearing and the school is placed on probation, I think we'd all be happy campers, so to speak. I just don't see that in the rule. In addition to that, it has made it difficult for some schools that are seeking surety bonds. Carriers that provide these bonds take a look at these rules, and they see a situation where a school can go on probation, cease enrollment, cease advertising, cease starting students, and also cease new income for that school. It does not make for an environment of success in securing a surety bond under that situation. And I'll give you an example. It's theoretically possible for the HEC to place a school on probation if the school does not have the ability or in a timely manner renew their surety bond on an annual basis. The school goes on probation because they've not been able to secure a surety bond. If you read the rules as it is right now, they will have to cease enrollment. They will have to cease marketing. So the financial impact, as we've already heard, on a school being placed on probation is profound. And it almost makes seeking a surety bond impossible for that school. So basically, by the imposition of sanctions, it actually places students who are attending that school on a bit of a risk, because if the school's not bringing in new income, at some point in time they're going to have to cease operations, and theoretically they don't have a surety bond in place. So it I think I understand why. I mean, I was part of the process of determining why we needed a surety bond and why we needed probation. I think the wording that we have right here is prohibitive, and I don't think it really meets the intent of what we had at that time.
Questions?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Theoretically, since it sounds like, with the exception of this one school, there hasn't been another school that's been on probation. So, but theoretically, how long can a career school, be on probation? Because I'm assuming that would impact the school financially even more.
Chair Reardon and Representative, I'm not aware of a school since the statute and administrative rule took effect in 2015 being placed on probation. The school that Nancy was referring to earlier actually is within a different division. It's under the private schools and not part of the ODA, the Office of Degree Authorization. So I'm not aware of any school, and Kyle and perhaps even Juan could answer that question more accurately with that. But the process of how a school goes on probation and how long it stays on probation will depend on, I assume, the ability of the school to correct whatever deficiencies were found by the Office of Degree Authorization.
Okay.
Can I call, is it Nancy? May I call her back up?
I think if she'll come up.
Yes. And for the committee and everybody present, forgive my ignorance on a lot of this stuff. I'm just trying to piece together things, and I wanted to ask questions. So you're an attorney, and then, sir, are you an attorney as well?
No. Okay.
So, would you, maybe I'm hearing it all wrong, would you say that the agency has these particular schools or whoever, in this case, I guess they're regulating kind of somewhat with current statute and rule at a real disadvantage if there becomes some sort of a conflict? It's kind of, is it somewhat gray how the school can combat an accusation or some sort of charge levied against them? Is that, am I hearing that right?
Yes. For these non-degree granting colleges, which I spoke to, and I'm not sure that's the same group that you're speaking to, but they have no right to challenge the decision of HEC in any way. And there were questions about, well, how would the public know about it? How does the media know about it? HEC communicates the results of placing a school on probation to the complainant. The complainant goes to the media. The complainant goes to social media. So immediately, those decisions are known. Nobody had to ask for a public records request on this one. The complainant went out and proceeded to tarnish the name of the school in a very big way. So I think that was one of the questions that was asked. And then the question about the process, yes, there's supposed to be internal complaint processes. Each school is supposed to have one. The school did. The student did not use that internal complaint process.
No, excuse me a minute. Are you talking about the previous bill or addressing this bill?
Right. And I don't know that I'm going to be able to respond to questions
about
this bill.
If we're talking about the previous bill, then it'd be kind of out of order, so we should continue that.
Sure. Mr. Chair, if I can add on to that.
You're talking about this bill, though.
Correct.
Thank you.
2559, the situation is very different. These Office of Degree Authorization, ODA schools, degree-granting schools, already have in place a option for appeal of a probationary order. The difficulty, and I think the assurances that the career schools need, is that the sanctions that are associated with a probationary order do not take effect until after the administrative hearing. And looking at the wording in current rule, it has been interpreted by providers of surety bonds as well as the schools themselves that the HEC has no alternative but to place the sanctions on the school when a formal probationary order has been issued. And there's not currently any language in the administrative rule or statute that prevents them from sanctions prior to the conclusion of the appeal. One other additional complaint about some of the wording. I think it's important that, and I don't think this bill reflects it, is that the appeal process should be voluntary, as we talked about previously with the private career schools. Looking at the wording of the current bill, I do think we need some work on it to indicate that the schools have the right to not appeal. I think if we put every school through a probationary appeal, we're probably delaying where the school may realize that they're the deficit in certain areas and so forth. So the current administrative rule provides the option of appeal, and I believe that we need to make sure that 2559 also provides an option of appeal rather than mandatory.
Mr. Chair, just quickly, it might be helpful for the committee if you would just explain the purpose behind the surety bonds, because that was relatively recent legislation we passed, so I think it would help them to understand the rationale behind that.
Exactly. Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Johnson, in 2015, when we worked with the HEC on creating the surety bond, was a period of time when there was quite a bit of media on school closures. I think we all are familiar with Corinthian colleges. We're probably all very familiar with ITT and some of the disastrous results of what occurred there. As schools that were operating in Oregon, under the Office of Degree Authorization, became clear that the requirement of having a surety bond protecting students who are currently enrolled and had paid tuition ahead of their program was not protected. On the private career school side, we have a tuition protection fund that schools pay into, and there's a large fund that is designed to reimburse students who've paid ahead on their tuition. There was no such provision on the ODA side. So we elected at that time to go forward with a surety bond, which is required of the school. And basically, the school either has to secure a bond equal to the amount of prepaid tuition, or they can also utilize a line of credit equal to that amount, protecting the amount of monies paid ahead by students attending that school.
Thanks. That's helpful. So I think we're all very interested in, you know, ensuring the financial stability of the schools, and because I think that does affect the students. They're paying into these schools. Do you see, and I'll ask Kyle this question as well, but do you see any changes here that would adversely affect HEC's ability to deal with a bad apple? And
That was one of the reasons why the disciplinary step was created in 3516 is that prior to that particular legislation, the HEC had two choices. Either it approved or it revoked approval, and that it was realistic to expect that a process of correction needs to occur. This bill, if it has the addendum that indicates that the appeal of probation is a voluntary step from the level of the school, shouldn't really change how the HEC has the ability to enforce its directives. If a school, for example, is horrendous, and you know, during investigation, that the Office of Degree Authorization realizes there's something major going on with this school, the HEC has the ability to jump right to suspension or revocation, and that's where I think we have some concern with the probationary aspect, which by definition is a period where the school should be having the opportunity to correct whatever deficiencies they have. When you remove the ability to advertise, enroll, start, and you have to notify anybody who has a role in the school, from student to employees, you're not really creating an environment of correction, because a school that is dependent on student tuition, and you've cut back all future tuition, is not going to stay in business very long and is not going to be successful.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Thomas, if you'd like to rejoin us.
Chair Reardon, members of the committee, my name is Kyle Thomas, the Director of Legislative and Policy Affairs of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. Just to kind of build upon the testimony on the prior bill and clarify exactly what we are discussing when we're discussing probation for ODA, or Office of Degree Authorization schools, there is a distinct difference. Probation for ODA schools does inherently restrict the ability of institutions to market or enroll students. And these are based on very specific potential statutory violations, the most salient of which, after the issues that occurred with ITT Tech, are the failure for an institution to acquire and maintain a surety bond that protects students in the event that an institution is not financially stable and eventually closes after a student has paid into tuition for a term that they have not completed because of the closure of the school. And in fact, in the ITT case, it was that surety bond that did provide, it was early before the term, so it only provided a minimum amount of refunds, but it was that bond that protected the student's financial interest in the event they had already paid. Under the HEC administrative rules, the act of placing an institution on probation triggers a 20-day grace period. And I think one thing that the committee might wish to consider when they look at this piece of legislation is whether or not the imposition of that hearing comes after that 20-day period starts or before that 20-day period starts. To put that another way, should there be a hearing before HEC has the ability to formally notify a school of a deficiency, or should the process of HEC formally notifying that school and starting a 20-day grace period be the act that triggers the hearing? Now, these processes have not been tested, to answer Representative Reardon's question. There have been zero ODA schools placed on probation since those statutes came under the authority of the HEC. But it is our understanding of the processes that if during that grace period an institution requests a hearing, that period would be extended until the disposition of the hearing. And so I can conclude testimony there and just offer the opportunity for questions.
Rep. Bynum.
I have a question of you. Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
If I could see the progressive discipline of each different type of school or institution that the HEC monitors, that would help me. So if progressive discipline looks like you receive the complaint, you investigate, you issue a notice that you're investigating and this is what the process is, and then maybe there's a probation, what does that look like? And then maybe there's some other thing, and then maybe there's notice to suspend and you're done. But that, it feels to me like we have a different set of progressive discipline policies depending on the type of school.
And it feels like the verbiage that we're using and the consequences that we're using in effect shut a school down in one case versus another case. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'd like to see visually what we're doing for each of the different types, and is that fair and just?
I have, you've really captured my thoughts as well in terms of trying to do, you know, almost flow chart these processes and do a fair comparison. So I don't have a good answer. I will try to pursue that so I have a better mental image as well. And I'd be happy to talk to anybody on the committee that wants to help map that out.
Or maybe that's the ask for the
or we could ask somebody out there.
Chair Reader Bynum, I think we could create such a roadmap for you. I just remind you that just because the types of disciplinary action are linear and progressive in statute does not mean that HEC has to pursue them in that order. It does have the ability to suspend or revoke a license of certain schools without that intermediary step.
When might such a flowchart be available? Not to put you on the spot. But
I think that's something we can, Chair Reardon, I think that's something we can produce probably by early next week.
That'd be fantastic. Very helpful. Because these are interesting processes. And I'm not sure, I certainly don't understand the rationale for one process versus the other, but to be honest. Any other questions? Oh, Rep. Alonzo Leon.
Yes. I'd like to acknowledge my colleague here, Representative Bynum. Thank you for asking that very brilliant question, because I think maybe one of the challenges is that if it's not public knowledge, if it's not on a website, if it's not stated somewhere obvious, then people can be confused around what the system is or what's expected. So, and it sounds like it's not out there because you'll have to develop it. So hopefully once it's developed, it becomes public and it's on the HEC website so everybody knows what the procedures are to get to that point. Because I think once people understand, they know what the expectation is of them in addition to the confusing language. So thank you.
Oh, Rep. Wisman.
Thank you, Mr.
Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and committee members and to Mr. Thomas, I think these two bills have brought up an issue. I'm not sure that the solution is to prohibit. To me, the solution is to clarify this and get it reasonable. I mean, what are we doing here? We prohibit them from placing. We don't want to prohibit them. We want to have fair hearings and fair notification and not hinder these schools. I'm not sure what we're doing here. Are we going to have a group to work on modifying these? So there is a process, but it's a fair process, and it doesn't preempt harming those schools. The two bills we're voting on, I'm assuming, I looked the best I could on, appears to be that we're going to prohibit them from putting anyone on probation. Unless there's a hearing office, but so we that won't just to pass that bill unless we change the rules or we change the current statute is not going to solve this problem, is it? Mr. Thomas, do you have a comment?
Chair Reed and Representative Wisnett, granted, you've heard a very specific case here today. We have only undertaken actions that are covered by both of these pieces of legislation. We've only undertaken once in 3 years. So we do consider the impact and use that authority very judiciously. That being said, we would certainly be happy to sit with you in as it pertains to these two bills and you know, discuss how those processes can be improved.
Mr. Chair, follow up, please.
Yes.
But thank you for this for that comment. But we obviously something didn't go right here. There wouldn't be a possibility of court action or litigation.
Representative Reardon, Representative Wisnett. You know, without commenting again on the specifics of any individual case, certainly any time a state regulatory agency takes action against an individual business, an individual, that likelihood exists. And we recognize in this case that that is the opinion of the institution that action was taken against.
I think we've probably heard about enough for one afternoon on these two bills. We've got some thinking to do. We're going to get some additional information from you. There's been a suggested change to the process, so I would ask the committee to look at that, particularly on this particular bill, talking about when a hearing might occur prior to sanctions, that sort of thing. So we need to look at that. So I think we have our homework assignment, and I will be talking to each of you about it as well after we get that information. So I'm not committed to working this bill until we get a little greater clarification on it. And how that clarification occurs, maybe the carriers of the bill and the representative of the HEC should be chatting with each other and see what we can do about bringing some resolution to this. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2559. Okay. Really appreciate the committee's interest in this. We do have a shorter bill, I'm told. And that's not Ben Cannon. Opening a public hearing on House Bill 2457. Or if you would provide the committee with a brief summary.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2457 would modify the process by which Higher Education Coordinating Commission resolves student complaints against any school operating in Oregon. There is a -1 amendment that replaces the measure. It restricts HEC to investigating and resolving student complaints that relate to state financial aid. It allows HEC to refer student complaint to the appropriate state agency, the school's accrediting association, or the school at which the student is enrolled, and prohibits public record disclosure of student complaints.
Okay. Please come forward.
Good afternoon, Chair Reardon and members of the committee. I'm Kristen Granger. I'm president of the Oregon Alliance of Independent Colleges and Universities. Thank you very much for your the opportunity to speak today in favor of the amendments that we present to you, and also for your help in introducing House Bill 2557. The Alliance member colleges, they're the nonprofit, Oregon's 18 nonprofit private degree granting colleges in Oregon. We are committed to addressing student complaints, and there's strong evidence that suggests that we walk that talk. I'm only 6 weeks into my new position here, but in reviewing the legislative record from the bill that was introduced in 2015, there were a total of 5 complaints against Alliance member schools. Fewer than 5, actually, I think it was 4. Regardless, we strongly support the idea that students at all colleges and universities, public and private, should be able to register complaints with the government and the other entities that are charged with resolving those complaints. And we would further contend that ideally, registering a complaint should be a simple and accessible process that doesn't require students to research the statutes in order to find out how or where to register their complaint. We want students to feel comfortable reporting their concerns, removing barriers that might discourage them from accessing these processes or otherwise acting in their own best interest. As you may recall, the legislature passed a bill in 2015 in response to a federal mandate that all states devise and implement a student complaint process. And a lot more is now known about the expectations of federal authorities than there was then. And the Alliance has been working very closely with HEC to offer revisions to our 2015 statute that clarify and streamline the complaints process for Oregon students. And we are nearly there. There are still some tweaks that need to be made to the -1s that you have before you today. But we hope this bill will nonetheless have a work session. And when it does, the HEC and the Alliance will bring the committee amendments which we would together agree offer students a straightforward and accessible way to seek redress of their complaints, one that's cost-effective and efficient to administer and achieves federal compliance. Many thanks for your support of our efforts in the service of Oregon students, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions of Mr. Greenger? Ms. Kyle?
Chair Rudin, members of the committee, my name is Kyle Thomas. I'm the Director of Legislative and Policy Affairs for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. I'm not going to belabor the points, especially since I've been up here a couple times today. We agree. The context of the Dash 1 amendment generally moves towards proper resolution under evolving interpretations of what the Higher Education Act and Title IV requires states to implement for institutions to receive student financial aid dollars. That being said, there are a couple of ongoing just points of conversation. I won't even say disagreements, but a couple of language concerns that we have that we are working with the Alliance on, and it is my hope that those will be wrapped up fairly soon. And we would just ask that the committee provide the Alliance and the HEC a little bit more opportunity to iron those issues out. I will just point out one thing for you, in that because this the Dash 1 amendment, as it's written now, is meant to comply with the requirements of the federal act, it does confer on HEC a fairly narrow authority, and that is to receive student complaints. It is to farm those complaints out to the appropriate agency, and that is essentially the limits and the scope of the activity that's provided for. That being said, we're looking at the materials that the Alliance has provided that indicates that that activity alone is sufficient to meet the federal requirements. And if that is the case, then we are moving towards a position where we can move forward on this language.
Question? Okay. Everybody happy that they're working together? Yeah. Okay. All right. Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're hearing from our wonderful independents here, but I'm wondering if our public universities and colleges have input on the topic.
It's a great question. We know.
I might be mistaken, but I believe the section of statute we're amending here today applies only to independent institutions.
Okay. Okay. And can you give us a feel for how much time before we can have the final amendment?
We're really close. I think we could wrap this up within the next week or two.
Okay. Well, we're getting toward the end of our schedule here, so we'll look forward to hearing from you. And Kyle, looks like we'll be seeing each other next week. So. All right. Anyone from the public would like to testify? All right. Good.
I'm
closing the public hearing on House Bill 2457, closing meeting of the House Higher Education Workforce Development Committee. And despite the fact that many people in this committee got here late, we are finishing early. I'd never here late. We are finishing early.